This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
It's a great day to be alive, and it's a great day to be a better. Welcome inside to the VSiN Studios here at the Circa Resort and Casino in downtown Las Vegas. This is the Lombardi Line, hanging out with you guys on the DraftKings Network. We say hello to our viewers over on Samsung TV Plus on this Saturday morning, October 7th. Michael Lombardi, how are we doing this morning? Good morning, buddy.
We are doing well, Femi. I mean, we got Red River. Mm-hmm. We got a lot of good college football games. We got the great Jimbo Fisher hosting Alabama today. I can't wait. You know, we don't see him wearing those bifocals anymore because he's not calling plays, so he doesn't need them. But I'm anxious to watch it. And a lot of good college games going on. We'll get some clarity within the marketplace. So, you know, great. And then we got Sunday. We got a early kickoff on Sunday, and we got a lot of good games, so I'm excited for it.
Yeah, big football weekend in the state of Texas. I mean, you get Red River today. You get Cowboys Niners coming up Sunday night, so it's a big football weekend, but it's always a big football weekend in the state of Texas because I guess they invented football. At least they think that they did down there in the Lone Star State.
But they do it well.
They do. They do it very well.
I mean, if you've seen some of those high school stadiums, you would realize that they do it well.
Yeah, I mean, those stadiums sit like, 70,000 people or so? Like, it's insane.
I haven't seen one like that, but I know Allen, right outside of Dallas, they have like a 35,000 seater. It's beautiful. But the football's important. Football's important in this great state of Texas.
And football's important for us here on the Lombardi Line. And we have great guests that will help us set the table for the football today and tomorrow. Coming up in 15 minutes, former NFL MVP Rich Gannon will be joining us here as we break down all things NFL week number 5. Some fun matchups to go ahead and talk about with Rich Gannon. That'll be in the next segment. 30 minutes from right now at 10:30 Eastern, Tim Murray, host of VSiN Primetime, also the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast, will join us with his college football card. And then later on in hour number 2 at 8:30 West Coast time, 11:30 Eastern, the one and only Wes Reynolds, co-host of VSiN Tonight with our buddy Matt Humans, also host of the Long Shots Podcast. Get that wherever you get your podcast. Wes will join us to give us his college football expertise here on this fine Saturday. But we mentioned it, Michael. State of Texas is where all the eyes are. The State Fair of Texas this weekend, the Cotton Bowl, will be a live in a few hours for the Red River rivalry. Probably my second favorite rivalry in all of college sports here behind the Apple Cup. OU, Texas, Longhorns, 5-point favorites, total 60.5. Early thoughts on this showdown and a rivalry renewed in Dallas.
Well, I mean, look, Oklahoma, everybody had them buried for dead, and Brent Venables has done a tremendous job of getting the program back. I don't think people would realize, you know, they're still in the Big 12, right? They're still in the Big 12. And the number one offense in the Big 12 isn't Texas, it's Oklahoma. The number one defense in the Big 12 isn't Texas, it's Oklahoma. And so you can kind of manipulate the schedules, who they played, who haven't they played. But I think this Oklahoma team is really back, and they're playing well. They're playing the Brent Venables style of defense, giving up 10 points a game, you know, and their relative scoring, they're sixth in the nation in that area. Now, again, a lot of this is you have them, the colleges, they haven't gotten to the meat of the schedule, but, you know, I think this line, it's interesting how it's kind of gone towards Texas, but when you break the teams down, when you break both offensive and defensive downs, it's a very close game. I mean, I think it's going to be a great game. And look, let's face it, Oklahoma got embarrassed last year. They're playing for a lot more than just, hey, we got to beat Texas.
Yeah. Last year was like once in every probably 5-6 years, we'll get a blowout in Red River. Last year was more than a blowout. It was just a flat out embarrassing effort from Boomer Sooner in this matchup. But you mentioned it, the schedule, which is what I kind of want to hone in on here in this first segment, because OU has yet to play a ranked opponent. They played Arkansas State. They blew them out, played SMU, Tulsa, Cincinnati. Tulsa and Cincinnati were a road game, so give them credit there. Then last week, home against Iowa State. And this is one of the fascinating things about college football is that we get to the point to where, all right, how do these teams sort of match up? Because we know that the cream of the crop is the gap between them and the rest of the country seems to be pretty wide. How much do you factor into the fact that they haven't played a tough schedule to start out and how that might pertain to this matchup?
Well, I mean, look, all these college games, all these college teams, that nobody really plays a tough schedule. Even when they get into divisional rounds, they don't play a tough schedule. So I think this is going to come down to Dillon Gabriel, how he plays, how he operates, and Quinn Ewers. you know, how he plays and operates. I mean, look, Texas had a great win going in, beating Alabama. I think Alabama is a little bit of a different team now than they were then, as they tried to have, they kind of pieced together their quarterback situation. So, you know, I think when you play that scheduling thing in college football, I think you can only get more confused than you can get actually clarity. I think that's really the bigger issue. So, you know, I mean, I think, look, they played it, you know, it's a, you know, Oklahoma, it goes back forever. And I think ultimately, you know, when they got shut out last year, the energy and the intensity to me is back in place. And I think you got to take a look at that and how they handle that. So I kind of like Oklahoma because I love Brennable's defense. Mm. And I think that if Gabriel can play to the way he's been playing, you know, I mean, I feel like we've been watching this kid for 100 years, but I mean, look, let's face it. I mean, they're really good offensively. You know, they're eighth, ninth in the country in relative offense, total offense. You know, they control the football well, you know, yards per play. They're second in the conference. They're 21st in the league. I mean, you know, look, you don't just get these numbers because you haven't done something well.
Yeah, it's interesting. We'll give our final thoughts on this game to end the show here. But from a market standpoint, this open five, we've got to 5.5 in some spots, but I'm seeing on the board right now, Michael, there's a couple sports books where it's 4.5. So there is interest here in the Sooners, especially in a rivalry game as a dog, taking those points. We know that these games can be back and forth and usually comes down to the final possession. So maybe the valuable thing to do and the valuable bet to be made could be Oklahoma getting the points in this spot here. But it's fun to have this Red River rivalry back. It's my favorite rivalry outside of the Apple Cup. They were showing on College Game Day, showing some of the past memories, and who could forget Roy Williams sacking our guy Chris Sims in the end zone, and the ball popping up and all that stuff. And then of course there's the Colt McCoy Sam Bradford game that ended up helping decide who won the Big 12 and went to the national title game. So these are usually high stakes games, and we have another high stakes one with both these teams 5-0, not just for the Big 12, Michael, but also for the whole college football playoff, which it seems to be wide open this year more than years past.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, look, and Texas is a different team this year when you watch them up front, especially. Their defensive line is more dominant than it was last season. I mean, last season they had to rely on the blitz and they had to try to create pressure, you know. And this season, based on the analytical numbers, you know, they've been able to generate pressure from their four without having a blitz, you know. And They you know, in their top 20 in total sacks, their defensive tandem of Sweat and Murphy, they've combined for 17 pressures over the first five games of the season. So, you know, they can get pressure, and that's going to affect Gabriel. And I think that's where the game's going to be decided. Like all football games that are close with two teams is going to be decided in the offensive and defensive fronts.
Yep. The game is won and lost in the line of scrimmage. We will continue our discussion with Texas OU with all of our guests and also to wrap up the show. But you mentioned it, Alabama, Texas beat them in Tuscaloosa earlier this year. Well, the Tide, knowing that they probably have to run the table to get back to the college football playoff, they are visiting College Station to take on the Texas A&M Aggies, Jimbo Fisher and the crew. And right now we are seeing some interest in the Aggies over at DraftKings. The line is Alabama 2.5, total 46, but there's a lot of twos in the market here. Are you willing to back Jimbo and the crew against Nick and the Tide?
You know, look, last year he's a 2-point play away from winning the game, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, he's right there, you know, or tying the game. And so for me, you know, now they get him on their home field. I think really the question is, do I trust Milroe? This is, to me, we've taken Jimbo out of the equation. And what I mentioned at the beginning of the show about his not wearing his bifocals, he's really not doing anything on the sideline. Petrino's calling the offense. They've got the defense being run. He's just watching the game with you and I. Mm-hmm. And so I don't think this is about Jimbo versus Nick. I do think Alabama has improved their team over the course. I think they've, whatever they've done, you know, Lane Kiffin indicated that it's not Kevin Steele calling the defense. They've improved their defense. They're 17th in the nation. You know, they've improved their relative pass defense, which I thought was bad. I mean, Ole Miss couldn't do anything on them. I mean, Ole Miss and Mississippi State, two teams that are fairly good offensively, could not move the ball consistently on them coming off that South Florida game where they basically just they eked out a win 10-3 and they scored on the last play of the game. So, you know, this is going to be a defensive struggle. It's going to be a game of adjustments. I think it comes down to do you trust Milroe and do you trust the backup quarterback at Texas A&M. I think that's going to be the issue. We haven't talked enough about that, but I think that's really where the game kind of falls into place, is what kind of production does Texas A&M get out of their backup quarterback?
Yeah, Texas A&M's backup quarterback, Max Johnson, the son of Brad Johnson, Super Bowl winner with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He came in for an injured Connor Wegman. Connor Wegman is a guy that a lot of people were excited about, a potential dark horse Heisman. Unfortunately, he suffers the season-ending injury, so it'll be Max Johnson here on the wet rest of the way. But Texas A&M, it feels like they have so many talented players, and talent really hasn't been the issue for the Aggies. I mean, last year they had, what, like 8 5-stars in a recruiting class or something like that, one of the most decorated recruiting classes in the history of the recruiting service. But the Milroe thing, I think, is really where this comes down to. Can Jalen Milroe, yep, in a hostile environment, take care of the football and be efficient against a really good defense that has been able to hold really prolific offenses down? And that's kind of where this thing is going to be decided. I feel like, I think you hit that one on the head there with Milroe going up against the Aggies in a hostile environment.
You know, and I look, Mac Johnson, you know, has done a nice job when he filled in last week throwing to his mm-hmm. brother. You know, and I'll tell you what, the kid takes off and runs now. He's not timid. I mean, I thought he was going to get hurt last week when he was running around. And, you know, he's done a good job. Milroe's got to prove, I think. I think what A&M's going to do is say to Milroe, can you beat us from the pocket? But remember, this Texas A&M defense has improved since that disaster in South Florida.
Yeah, they definitely have improved. Last week, Johnson 210 in the passing game, and A&M went ahead and beat Arkansas 34-22. We will continue to break down all the big games in college football throughout these couple hours. But joining us next, former NFL MVP Rich Gannon, as we discuss all things National Football League here on the Lombardi Line, hanging out with you guys on the DraftKings Network.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abefefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today and get a daily email recapping all the best bets from our show hosts and guests. You'll also get unlimited access to our VSiN.com/picks page. Sort picks by sport, matchup, event date, and more. Check the top VSiN experts leaderboard to view betting records, profit, and ROI, and see which VSiN expert has the hot hand. For VSiN Pro picks, betting splits, power ratings, plus 24/7 video access, become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. Sign up today for only $19 for your first month at VSiN.com/subscribe. Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line, hanging out with you guys on the DraftKings Network. Femi Abefefe, Michael Lombardi out in the great state of New Jersey. And our next guest joining us now, former NFL MVP. Now you can hear him over on Sirius XM NFL Radio. It's the one and only Rich Gannon joining us here this morning on the Lombardi Line. Rich, we appreciate you taking the time out of your busy morning. And before we get into the quarterbacks and in the game specifically, what has been the biggest surprise to you so far through 5 weeks in this NFL season?
Well, that's a great question. You know, I would say line play. You know, I think there's some really bad line play right now, offensive line play in particular, and I think that's contributed to some of the struggles that some of these teams have had. You look at the Pittsburgh Steelers, they can't run the ball. They've not done a great job in the passing game. I think, you know, obviously Matt Canada's under a lot of fire. And I just think, you know, I think you go back and look at some of the offensive line play there in Pittsburgh, particularly as it relates to Najee Harris in the running game. They're not coming off on combination blocks, not get up on the second level. They can't get back to line of scrimmage. That's just one example. But there's a number of teams out there. The Vikings have had a difficult time running the ball, protecting Kirk Cousins. The turnovers have been a big issue. But, you know, Michael will tell you, and Bill Belichick said this all the time, I mean, September is an opportunity for, you know, the offensive linemen to get better at their craft. But I'm surprised at some of the poor offensive line play. I think a lot of it goes back, guys, to the fact that we don't put the pads on in the spring. We don't really do much in mini camps anymore. We don't do much in training camp. And I think it's a contributing factor to the slow start for some of these offensive lines.
I mean, I think Cincinnati, Rich, is the perfect example, right? Zach Taylor takes the approach, we're not going to do anything in the spring. We're going to have kind of sing kumbaya, have a little bit, you know, get together. And, you know, we're not going to have mini camps. No need for that. And then, you know, 4 weeks into the season, he can't block anybody. But take us into, you played the position at a high level. You won MVP. Joe Burrow's numbers are not who Joe Burrow is. So how has that calf affected it? And do you think there is a turning point, maybe this week or maybe in the future, for Burrow and the injury?
You know, I think they could lose to Arizona. I really, guys, you know, look at what Arizona's done the first 4 weeks of the season. Joshua Dobbs, I mean, you know, they're playing hard, inspired football. So that's not a guarantee that Cincinnati's going to go into Arizona and beat him. I agree with you, Michael. I think you look at Joe Burrow right now. I think the fact that he missed all of training camp, I mean, even reps for a veteran quarterback are very, very important. The offensive line, as you've mentioned, has been a problem the last couple of years, particularly getting out the gates. And I think the calf has bothered him. I think you watched him last week, his inability to really put a lot of weight on that back foot. He's been sailing the ball a little bit. The ball's been sailing on him a little bit. He hasn't been able to drive the ball down the field outside the numbers. I think it affects everything that they do. I think it affects his confidence. I mean, this is a hard game to play when you're healthy. It's almost impossible to play when you're not healthy. And I think you see that with Burrow right now. They're running out of time. I mean, they go to Arizona this week and lose, and they're in big trouble of obviously having a chance to compete for the division title, but also make the playoffs.
Yeah, it feels like season on the line for the Cincinnati Bengals down there in Arizona right now. They're a 3-point favorite over at our show sponsor, DraftKings. We're speaking with Rich Gannon, former NFL MVP, now analyst over at SiriusXM NFL Radio. Well, Rich, let's talk about these rookie quarterbacks, because we had you on during the draft process and you talked about the guys that you liked and kind of gave us an evaluation on all the rookie quarterbacks who we expected to go in the first round. What do you make of Bryce Young so far and the struggles that he's had in Carolina? CJ Stroud's been terrific in Houston. Also, Anthony Richardson making plays for the Indianapolis Colts. How do you assess those kind of top three guys that went in the top four in this past spring's draft?
I'll give you my summation. I think when you look at Bryce Young, I think so much of what happens at the quarterback position is impacted by what's going on around them. Their offensive line has been inconsistent. The receiving core is not great. And they've had a difficult time getting the running back engaged and getting that part of it going. So I think they're just struggling to kind of find out who they are as an offense, find an identity. And this young quarterback, unfortunately, is suffering some of the consequences. I don't think his feet have been great. I think they've got some mechanical things he's got to work through. He's a very talented player. He's got a lot of upside, but he's going through some growing pains. The guy that's really impressed me is C.J. Stroud. Of all the quarterbacks, I thought going to that situation in Houston, he's not surrounded by an all-star supporting cast. And Mike Martz over in the 33rd team did a great breakdown of C.J. Stroud's first four games. Guys, he's been really, really good. He's thrown the ball in rhythm, his confidence, his eyes, his feet, the decision-making, taking care of the football. He's been outstanding, and I think that's a great sign for the future in Houston. And, of course, you know, Richardson in Indianapolis, he's had a difficult time staying healthy. He's a bit of a wild card. You know, the accuracy, the decision-making, all those things are going to be a work in progress for him. He had a difficult time with the completion percentage in college. I think that'll still be an issue for him this first year. But, you know, he's the wild card because he is a big, strong, physical, athletic guy that can extend and create and manufacture plays. So to me, you know, if he can protect himself, I think he's a guy that can make things difficult for defenses. But the passing game, if you get him to, if you force him to sit in the pocket, he's going to have some issues.
Rich, as a teammate, right, you go to Detroit this weekend. And if you're on that Carolina team, you ran for 350 yards against them. And now you can't run for 50 yards. Like, what do you think's going through the Panthers players' minds? I know they've changed offensive scheme, but last year they were a dominant run team. I know Foreman signed with the Bears, even though he's on their inactive list. They're not even using him. But, like, to me, there has to be some sense of doubt within that Panther locker room offensively. Like, wait a minute, we were actually getting better last year. Now we're worse.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. That's a good one. That's a good one, Michael, because you think about you changing coordinators and you got different line coach, and there's a lot going on. And I think you're trying to develop a young quarterback. And when you're trying to develop a young quarterback, you better be able to support him with a good offensive line and protection, and most importantly, a sound running game. And they haven't really had that. And, you know, they go out and get Miles Sanders. So I like this guy. I think he's a talented player. He had some great success in Philadelphia. Isn't it amazing? You play your Miles Sanders and you play behind the best offensive line in football. Things are pretty good. You go somewhere else, you got a different play caller and a different offensive line and an experienced quarterback, and now all of a sudden it's difficult to get back to the line of scrimmage. So, hey, the one thing I like about Detroit are their line play on both sides of the ball. I mean, they are physical. They come after you. They attack you. They take it on the personality and the demeanor of their head coach, Dan Campbell. This is going to be if Carolina doesn't go up there with their big boy pads and get ready to get in the trenches and fight this one out, it could be a long day for them.
Hey, Lions right now 9.5-point home favorites in that game against the Panthers. Well, Rich, let's talk about a couple of your former teams. The Kansas City Chiefs are going to be in Minnesota this weekend to take on the Vikings. Chiefs right now 3.5-point favorites, total 53. But the betting market has been interested in the Vikings to keep this game competitive. Do you agree with what you expect to see come tomorrow?
You know, you look at the Chiefs right now, and their tackle play is a concern. You know, Smith at the left tackle, Taylor at the right tackle, both have had their issues. The left tackle has had a propensity to grab and hold, and the right tackle's got the propensity to line up as an H-back in the backfield.
It's unbelievable.
But that's a bit of an issue right now. But as bad as things are, they've got that quarterback in their hip pocket, and he makes everyone around him better. I mean, you know, so I think the game's going to be closer than people think. I think the Vikings, obviously, they know what's at stake here. You know, the problem with the Vikings and Brian Flores, he doesn't have the pass rushers other than Danielle Hunter, and they don't have the cover corners. So he knows that in order to get to the quarterback, he's got to bring pressure. There's no one that's blitzing more right now than the Minnesota Vikings. Their safety, Harrison Smith, had 3 sacks last week against Carolina. So they've got to, in order to get there, they've got to bring perimeter pressure. And if you do that against Patrick Mahomes, you really expose yourself on the back end. And to me, that's going to be a chess match. Very interesting to see what they do and how they try and slow down Travis Kelce.
You know, it's funny. I agree. You know, last year when they lost Tyreek Hill, we all thought it was going to dampen the offense. And Mahomes comes through and averages 8.1 yards per attempt. This year, he's at 7-0, and that includes the Bears game in the numbers for 4 weeks. Like, you hit the nail on the head. If they don't get this line improved quickly, then this is going to be a vulnerability for the Chiefs moving forward.
Michael, look at what the Jets did. I mean, Kelce was pretty much a non-factor. I think he had 5 catches for like 60 yards. So they kept the lid on him. And then, you know, you look at, if you really break down the Chiefs right now, they've got 13 different players, receivers, tight ends, backs that have touched the ball in the passing game. So they don't really, you know, I think they're trying to find out, you know, the passing game. And I think, you know, that's kind of Andy Reid's MO. They're not going to have Justin Jefferson per se, but, you know, they've got a bunch of guys that are functional guys in the system, and they kind of make it go, but it was difficult. If you can slow down Kelce, if you can take away, you know, the middle of the field, third down, red zone production, man, that makes things a whole lot more difficult on Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, it'll be a tough task for the Minnesota Vikings, but the betting market appears to think that they are up for it. He is Rich Gannon, former NFL MVP, now NFL analyst over at SiriusXM NFL Radio. Rich, we appreciate the time. Be well.
Great job, Rich. Thank you.
You guys are the best. Love it. See you guys.
Awesome stuff there from Rich Gannon. On the other side, Tim Murray will give us his college football card next here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abefefe, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Basketball season is ready to tip off, and the VSiN experts have been hard at work tracking the latest player moves to help you bet smarter. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today and get our all-new NBA betting guide featuring up-to-date previews on all 30 teams, including Michael's 76ers, futures and year-long player props, best bets on player awards like Rookie of the Year, live betting strategies, plus strategy and advice on building your own NBA betting model from senior NBA analyst Jonathan Von Tobel. Give yourself an edge this season and get the VSiN NBA betting guide by becoming a VSiN Pro subscriber today at VSiN.com/subscribe. Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line, hanging out with you guys on the DraftKings Network here this Saturday morning, a college football Saturday, and nobody better to help us get set for the day's slate than our buddy Tim Murray, host of VSiN Primetime, also the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. Get that wherever you get your podcast. Tim, good morning. Thanks for waking up with us. Before we get to your plays, got to ask you about the Red River rivalry. OU, Texas, Longhorns, 5-point favorites, total 60.5. I know you don't have a play in this game, but how do you kind of see this one playing out later on today?
Yeah, I can't wait to sit back and watch this one, guys. It's going to be, it is as highly anticipated as I can remember, this rivalry being both teams undefeated. And I think the question that I posed on the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast, guys, was, what do we know about Oklahoma? I think we know what Texas is to an extent, right? They went to Tuscaloosa and arguably have the best win in the college football season, going in there and winning by double digits. Oklahoma's undefeated against the spread, but who are they, right? They were kind of right there with SMU, pulled away late. Same thing with Cincinnati. Offense didn't go nuts, but the defense played quite well on the road at Nippert Stadium a couple weeks ago. And then last week, it was a close game until it wasn't against Iowa State. So I'm really intrigued to see who Oklahoma is. I mean, the market's telling us right now that Oklahoma's probably the right side, as this number has come in their direction, as this has moved about a point and a half since the open, around six and a half. Look, Texas is a team I was very high on preseason, talked about it on your guys' show. Look, my future bet on them, I could lose this game. It's all right. But I've been very impressed ultimately by Texas. I think their run game is coming alive here with Brooks in the backfield rushing for over 200 yards last week. They've got weapons outside, and Jatavion Sanders being available this week, I think, is a really big boost for them. Their tight end, who I don't know if he'll be a first round pick, guys, but certainly will be playing on Sundays come next year. So like you said, Femi, no official play for me. I guess a slight lean to OU just because it feels like these two teams are relatively evenly matched. And he got a little bit of the revenge factor after last year's thumping that Texas put on him. But ultimately, guys, I'm just going to sit back and watch this one as a fan and see what we learn about Oklahoma, because at this point, I'm kind of at the learning process about the Sooners, because I don't know exactly who they are right now.
Well, you do know who A&M is, and you do know who Alabama is, and you and Jimbo are in collusion today. So explain why you like your man Jimbo.
Yeah, my man Jimbo is not a phrase that I want to hear.
When you're betting him, he's your man. You got to go with him. You got to go with him. He's your guy.
Maybe more Bobby Petrino's my man. I don't know if that's any better, Michael, but Bobby.
Oh, that's a lot better. Trust me, that's a lot better. Yeah, I mean, Petrino's a good coach.
Yeah, I mean, Bobby Petrino can scheme it up. And look, betting against Nick Saban over the years makes you lose a lot of money. And I'm doing it today. But I really like the matchup here. Look, Texas A&M, their one loss came against Miami. I loved Miami in that spot. And they took advantage of Texas A&M vertically. I don't know if Alabama can do that today, guys. I mean, that's the thing about Alabama and this offense so far this year, is they want to kind of grind it out and play a little, rock 'em sock 'em type of game. And I think Texas A&M can play that game with them. You know, you're finally seeing, how long have we been hearing about, Texas A&M, number one recruiting class, look at all this NIL money, and it never bared fruit. You're starting to see that fruit happen here. Quarterback, Jalen Milroe versus for Alabama. Max Johnson's going to get the go for Texas A&M with Connor Wegman hurt. Who gets the advantage? I think it's a bit of a wash. Maybe you give the athleticism, to Jalen Milroe, but Jalen Milroe does not scare me trying to go vertically here. So that's why ultimately I'm going to take the points with Texas A&M. It's a road game. Kyle Field, we know how great that environment's going to be this afternoon. So I'm going to roll with the 12th man here, Giga Maggie, and I'm going to take the points with Texas A&M. And look, last 2 years, it has been a very close game. 2 years ago, Texas A&M in the highly anticipated, Jimbo versus Nick Saban Bowl, after everything that was said at SEC Media Days, et cetera, Texas A&M won that game outright. Last year, Jalen Milroe gets the start for an injured Bryce Young, and it comes down to the last second, and Texas A&M throws a pass into the end zone and gets knocked down, and Alabama is able to escape. So I do like the track record, at least the last couple of years, for Texas A&M against Alabama. And I think Texas A&M is going to be ready to go. So, yeah, Michael, I'm going to put up my hands here and hope that, as you said, my guy Jimbo can pull this one off.
Yeah.
Jimbo. Not someone I love to back, but I'll take him here.
Well, backing them this afternoon, we're speaking with Tim Murray, host of VSiN Primetime. You can check it out Monday through Friday, 6 to 9 Eastern. Also, host of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. Get it wherever you get your podcast. Well, Tim, I'm not sure if you know or not, but here on the Lombardi Line, this is the official show of Cam Ward, Washington State's quarterback. Yeah. We are big fans of Cam Ward, and we see that you are going against him today, laying it. Why do you like the Bruins against Washington State in this spot?
Well, I'm old enough to remember week one when I went against Cam Ward, and Michael kind of gave me a talking to week one. He said, "You're going against Cam Ward. What are you doing?" And he was right. I was wrong. I'm doing it again. I'm going with UCLA here. I love Cam Ward. What's not to love about Cam Ward? I see on the screen there 3.5. I don't love the 3.5. Let's lay the 3. That's available. We're going to roll with Washington. We're going to roll with UCLA here in this spot. We'll see what Cam Ward's got. Look, Ben Arbuckle, their offensive coordinator coming in from Western Kentucky, has been tremendous. They have fit very well together so far. But this is one of those lines, guys, that makes you go, huh, why is unranked UCLA a 3-point favorite against number 13 Washington State? And the reason is UCLA is the best defense that Washington State has faced to this point. Now, Oregon State's very good defensively overall, but in the secondary, not so much. And Cam Ward, as you guys have noted, took advantage and was phenomenal against the Beavs when Washington State hosted Oregon State just a couple weeks ago on the road. Not that this is going to be a raucous environment by any stretch, but I do like the fact that they're on the road. We're getting Dante Moore in a bounce back spot and the quarterback for UCLA. And look back at 2 weeks ago, UCLA goes on the road. I mean, they put out an absolute stinker offensively against Utah in Rice-Eccles. The defense was fantastic against Utah. So I'm very curious to see how Cam Ward, who, look, I'm with you guys. I like Cam Ward a lot. My partner, Sean King, he loves Cam Ward. He's on Washington State. So I'm on an island a little bit here in this particular spot. But I'm going to trust in Chip Kelly coming off of a bye week at home. And I'm going to roll with the Bruins laying the 3.
6 in the country yards per play pass attempt. Just FYI there, you know, and, you know, look, I think it's, you know, look, this is a really good offense against a good defense. And when you break it down, I think you're right. So, you know, but Ward to me is, and the one thing that Washington State hasn't been able to do, and they rank 103rd in the country in the area, is they've been not very good in the red zone, but that's because they make so many explosive plays. Anyway, I digress. Georgia, you love Georgia laying the 14 at Kentucky. You're going against the trend here. Everybody seems to be on Kentucky on this one, Tim.
Well, I don't know if you've heard, Michael, but Georgia hasn't covered a game all year. That's that's the word on the street. Everybody
says it.
Georgia can't cover. Georgia stinks. Well, I don't know if they've said that, but I really like this spot, guys, for Georgia. And I think there's a reason when this touched 14, boom, immediately it went back to 14.5. So, hey, it's Saturday. It's game day. We're going to have to lay that hook. That's all right. We're going to roll with the dogs here. Not the dog with an O, A-W-G in this spot at home between the hedges, night game. Kentucky hasn't had a road game all year. I loved Kentucky last week. It was one of my favorite plays, and they were able to run it down the throat of Florida and win that game 33-14. Ray Davis, he might have success today. He's not going to have 200 plus yards against this Georgia defense. And as we've learned a little bit over the years here, Kirby Smart is kind of that master type of motivator. Somehow he convinced his team that people thought they were going to be 6-6 last year. Nobody said that, but they believed it. I think this has been the ultimate week of, hey, we're not that good. We're not as good as our record. People are doubting us. And I think you're going to see the best effort from Georgia tonight, night game. They're down in between the hedges, Sanford Stadium. So I love the kind of perfect storm here. Winless against the spread. They're going to get up for this game. And I think Georgia gives their best effort tonight. And I think Kentucky really struggles to get some points on the board. So we're going to roll with the dogs, not the dog, dogs tonight with Georgia.
Who's that coming Love down it. The track? It's a mean machine Love in red it. And black, baby. Tim Murray on Georgia. He is Tim Murray. Check him out over on VSiN Primetime, also the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. Tim, good luck with the bets. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, right, Tim. Fellas. Appreciate you.
Awesome stuff there from Tim. On the other side, we'll turn our attention to the news and notes from around the National Football League.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Don't forget, on DraftKings Sportsbook this season, new customers can bet $5 and pocket $200 in bonus bets instantly. Plus, all customers can get a no-sweat same-game parlay every day. Download the app and use the promo code VSiN when you sign up. DraftKings Sportsbook, the crown is yours. Welcome back. It's the Lombardi Line here on the DraftKings Network on a Saturday morning. Good morning to everybody. Good luck with all the bets later on today. Thank you to Tim Murray, who joined us in the last segment there, giving us his college football card. If you missed it, make sure you check out the Lombardi Line in podcast form. Get that wherever you get your podcast. But before we continue here, Michael, obviously the week five of the NFL started off with some sad news as we lost one of the greats in the National Football League. Dick Butkus, the Hall of Famer, the Bears legend, passed away at the age of 80. For those who are unfamiliar, Michael, you wrote about Dick Butkus in your new book, Football Done Right. Make sure you get that wherever you would go ahead and shop for your books. And I know that this is a player that we've talked about years ago, even just about like how he would translate to the NFL in this kind of stature of the game here. But just kind of, can you just talk about like what Dick Butkus meant as a football watching fan growing up and just kind of his whole persona and what it means to the National Football League?
Well, I mean, there's certain players that make numbers, right? You know, 23, Jordan, you know, 5, DiMaggio. There's certain players that just, 44, you think of John Riggins. Mm. You know, there's certain numbers that just jump out to you. You know, Lawrence Taylor, 56. Dick Butkus, 51. Just, you know, when you see a 51, you think of Butkus. And you think of the dominance of the middle linebacker position in the 60s and 70s, when that's when the game was. He called the defense. The defensive coordinator wasn't on the sidelines. It was on the field. You know, they played downhill, 4-3, 2 tackles and 2 techniques, and he took on the center. And, you know, what I wrote in my book is when the play started, he was a ballerina. And when the play was over, he was a bulldozer. And he was physical. He was tough. He could run like the wind. He could attack the pocket. You know, there were not a lot of 5-man pressures in those days. There were no zone blitzes in those days, so he couldn't, you know, fake coming and going. But I do know what in those days that nobody wanted to block him and get in front of him. And I think if he played today, he would look like a little like Micah Parsons in that day. You could move him around, dominate the middle, but when it was third down, he would be on the field attacking that pocket, doing something to alter the protection, doing something to create havoc. People say, well, could he cover? Who cares? He's going to rush the passer. You know, do you want Micah Parsons covering?
No.
No, I don't think you do. So that's where I think the translation of the game really becomes rather difficult. And I think when a player signals a number, you know, and has the kind of toughness and the legendary play that he had, you just take your hat off. He was the ultimate Bear.
Yeah, he was the ultimate Bear. And that's what the chairman, George H. McCaskey, said in a statement Thursday night when we learned of the passing of Dick Butkus. He said, Dick was the ultimate Bear and one of the greatest players in NFL history, passing away peacefully in his home in Malibu, California. And like, you just take a look at the resume, because I'm younger, so I didn't see Dick Butkus play obviously when he was playing, but I've seen the NFL films footage and I've seen those clips, and it's just like it jumps off the screen of like, wow, this dude was absolutely menacing. 2-time defensive player of the year, 5-time first team all pro, 8-time pro bowler. He was a member of the 1960s and 1970s all decade team, so that kind of shows you the greatness and the longevity of his career at a pretty physical position, playing from 1965 to 1973. And he's kind of one of the first people that you think of, Michael, when you think of the Chicago Bears. You know, obviously the 85 Bears, they won their Super Bowl that year, but when you think of the Chicago Bears and you think of the lineage of that position, that linebacker that they've had in that franchise, it starts with Dick Butkus.
No question. You know, you think of Butkus, you think of Sayers, you think of this, the kind of the game when the game was exploding and moving forward, and you think of his physicality and his toughness. And that's what the Bears are all about. That's what they are all about, physicality and toughness. That's something that has been part of their tradition going back to Papa Bear, George Halas. So 80 years old, he dies in his sleep in Malibu. Certainly he will be gone, but not forgotten. We'll honor his legacy moving forward. And I'm glad to see that people have started to watch some of his clips on YouTube, started to watch some of his clips on Twitter as they show it to honor this man and the greatness that he showed playing football.
Yeah, a life well lived. Dick Butkus passing away at the age of 80. Staying on the theme of the Chicago Bears here, we did see they got their first win. So congratulations to the Bears Thursday night there, beating the Washington Commanders 40-20. But then the Bears made a move Friday morning, trading Chase Claypool to the Miami Dolphins. A pick swap here, but it was kind of like a get this guy out of our building, essentially, is what the Bears were looking to do.
This was a giveaway trade. This was a give. We saw two giveaway trades this week. The J.C. Jackson trade was a giveaway. giveaway trade, right?
Yep.
I mean, they just gave him away. They said, okay, we want him out of the building. That's it. We're done. He's gone. And this trade was also a giveaway trade because for the Bears, look, let's face it, Ryan Poles made a huge mistake. He gives up a second round pick. And I'm going to keep saying this till I'm blue in the face. When the Pittsburgh Steelers call you on the phone and they say, hey, we want to trade you, you know, one of our players who's young and is promising, you should probably run away. You should probably run away because they rarely make a mistake. There's something going on that bothers them. But, you know, Miami takes him on and they know he's in the last year of his contract, right? So they have very little problems with it. But here's where it became a giveaway trade. Because of the way he's played and behaved, his market next year in the free agency is not going to be very robust. And so therefore, Chicago said, we're not going to hold on to him because we're not going to get anything back for him. And if, you know, why not get him out of the building? Because he's not going to bring us anything in free agency and we're not going to sign him. And he's a cancer to our team. He's toxic in the locker room. So they trade him to Miami. Miami feels like, okay, we'll dress him up. Well, he'll be a fourth option on our team. And maybe somebody will be dumb enough in free agency to pay him. And maybe we'll get a comp 5 or a comp 6. Doubtful, but maybe. You never know. So that's why the value of the deal was so low. Look, this kid's at a crossroads. Mm-hmm. You know, he's no longer potential. He's about, you better change who you are and you better fit in pretty quickly because nobody's going to want to take on a problem. And especially in free agency, when your contract's up, you then have to prove you're not a problem.
If on the Miami side of it, is the risk worth the reward? Because we've seen two organizations now just say, get this guy out of here. Pittsburgh, they were lucky to get the second round pick out of Ryan Poles. And now Ryan Poles, who traded that second round pick, not even a year later says, we want no parts of this guy. Dolphins team that has Super Bowl aspirations, is the risk worth the reward bringing this guy into the building?
Well, I think, yeah. I mean, look, when he comes into the building, he's got to have to, you know, he's no longer coming in as a high-level trade. He's coming in as scarred. But, is you know, they're probably sitting there saying he's better than Robbie Chosen, formerly Robbie Anderson. Mm-hmm. You know, could he help us more than Cedric Wilson, perhaps? You know, right now, Braxton Berrios is their third, you know, and so they'll probably play him more in the slot to give him a big receiver in there. You know, I think ultimately you would say on the surface, no. I mean, but you would say, why wouldn't they direct their attention to trying to find another offensive lineman? Well, we all know there's no good offensive lineman out there. Mm-hmm. I mean, with Connor Williams out, they've had to play Leon Eckenberg at center. That's been a problem. And last week, that Robert Hunt got destroyed inside by Daquan Jones. I mean, that was not good. That's this line, what people don't understand, what McDaniels is able to do, is he's hiding the line. Because he knows if people get in front of Tua, the game's over. So what he's done with his run game, what he's done with his offense is hide the line. And so when you're the Giants and you've got Leonard Williams, you've got Dexter Lawrence inside, you want to get pressure. Unfortunately, the ball's coming out too quick.
Yeah, and we saw for the offensive line on the Miami Dolphins front, Teron Armstead going on short-term IR, so he'll miss month. I mean,
we were saying this in July. Yeah. I mean, if DraftKings would have given me an odds on him going on IR, I would have taken it. The problem is DraftKings is too smart. They didn't put that bet out there. They knew it too. Like, he's not going to – and then Lamb, the thing with Lamb, when he plays at left tackle – you got to power him. You got to push him back, and you can. And when he came in the game last week against Buffalo, that's exactly what Buffalo did. They pushed him back. And, you know, but again, the ball's coming out really quick. The Giants are the least amount of pressures in the league, even though they've pressured a lot with Don Martindale, but they've only really affected the quarterback 18 times. And Miami's quarterback has only been affected a league low 12 times all season. 12 times, that's it.
Wow.
It's all two has really been affected. And that's why they're having so much success.
Having success and having fun. We got about 40 seconds left here, Michael. Real quick, your thoughts on the Randy Gregory trade going from Denver to San Francisco.
I like it a lot. I mean, Randy Gregory has ability. Now, he's not always perfect off the field, but with their defensive line coach in San Francisco. Look, San Francisco ranks 21st in pressures. They're not getting there. Bosa has not been the same player he was last year as the defensive player of the year. They need more edge. They need more edge. And the way they coach defensive linemen there, I think it's a home run for them. Plus, there's no downside to it. Mm-hmm. There's no downside whatsoever. And they keep him out of Dallas, which is where he was headed and they're not traded for him.
Yeah, that's what I was hoping for. I was hoping that he'd clear waivers and just come on back to Dallas. But the Niners step in front and said, no, sirree. He's going to be in Santa Clara. Maybe he'll play on Sunday night. We'll see what happens later on this weekend. But we'll get to the Lombardi look ahead to start hour number two next here on the DraftKings Network.